some very interesting revelations from a horse vet and PhD student who told delegates at an Australian Veterinary Association conference in Melbourne that much of the information animal rights activists use in campaigns opposing horse racing is misleading or wrong. The author of that paper joins us on Talking Horses, Dr. Meredith Flash. How are you, Dr. Flash?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Well, most interesting, this report that you presented at the recent conference for the Australian Veterinary Association. How long has this been in the making?
Oh, we've been looking at this study for a few years ago. We started it in 2013 and we followed the horses through this particular foal crop through until they were at the start of their 10-year-old racing season.
Okay. Well, this report that you've put together, findings that come from 2005 onwards, disprove myths spread by animal rights groups about two-year-old racing and horse welfare, unraced and retired racehorses being sent to slaughter, and low racing participation rates amongst thoroughbred foal crops.
Yes, we looked at the number of horses across the 2005 Victorian foal crop that entered training and raced. We then looked at the age in which they first started racing, and we did a phone survey to determine where they went when they finished racing or if they hadn't raced.
Okay. So some of the statistics that have come out of that show, firstly, that most horses trained 74% and raced 65%, which contradicts claims by animal activists that the racing industry is responsible for so-called wastage due to overbreeding.
Yes, a lot of the organizations that are campaigning against horse racing, they claim that only a small proportion of the foal crop actually races. The basis of this claim is a misquote from a lecture proceedings from 1995 by the late John Burke, where he actually stated that out of 1,000 mares, 300 foals will eventually race. Now, in that, he looked at losses from prior to conception, so failure to conceive, failure to carry a foal to term, early foal death, perinatal death, and horses that didn't race. The problem we have is that a lot of these organizations have changed that word, a single word in the sentence, that mares, which has then been changed to foals, which creates an overestimation of the number of horses born. If you change the word to foals, it creates an overestimation of 56%. And to change the word to pregnancies, as RSPCA has done, it creates an overestimation of the horses born to 27%.
So what you're saying then, in simple terms, is that more horses that are bred, thoroughbreds that is, make the racetrack than what has been reported more widely in recent years?
Yes, because we haven't looked at, we don't have good data up until now of how many horses actually race. So all that has been put forward is these misinformation from these animal rights or anti-racing campaigns. We now have more concrete information saying that actually the majority of horses race and train, and that it contradicts the perception that there is overbreeding within the industry.
Okay, and Dr. Flash, you also examined how the absence of research on horses retiring from racing has in fact led to false claims from animal rights organisations that most horses retiring from racing are sent to slaughter.
Well, yes, the flow-on effect from the first claim that only a small proportion of foal crop race means that they then try to use the published number of the foal crop to calculate that an enormous amount of horses don't race or were sent directly to slaughter, and this simply isn't true. My study looked at the horses exiting the foal crop and found that 50% of horses that raced and 33% of horses that were unraced were rehomed. which was the majority of horses, or the largest category of horses, were rehomed from the exit survey.
And most of those rehomed horses go on to pursuits like eventing, pony club, or pleasure riding, don't they?
Yes, they do. The most common category for those rehomed horses were equestrian pursuits. As we saw last weekend with 50 horses, retired racehorses, competing at Melbourne International 3-Day. These horses go on to have a large, successful career. And this is supported by research that found that the most common breed in pleasure horses or recreational horses are thoroughbreds.
They sure are, and they're doing well in those various pursuits. Now, another interesting statistic to come out of your research was the number of horses that are still racing at the start of their 10-year-old season.
Yes, we had 2% of horses that were still racing at the start of the 10-year-old racing season, and of those, the majority started their racing careers at 2 and 3 years of age. So that leads us on to our next myth, that 2-year-old racing is widespread and detrimental to the long-term careers of these horses. You know, for the 2-year-olds, horses that started their racing career at 2-year-olds had the longest careers and the most career starts of any of the other race start cohorts.
How interesting. What do you attribute that to, wearing your veterinarian hat?
In the 2005 fall crop, a third of the fall crop actually trained, but only 13% raced, which suggests that trainers and owners are looking after the welfare of their horses. And if they're not mentally or physically mature enough to start racing at that young age, they're held and raced at a later date.
Okay, because the RSPCA has very publicly and widely claimed that a large proportion of thoroughbreds start their racing careers as 2-year-olds and that this is detrimental to them.
Well, that's we actually have research from over 20 years ago stating that less than 50% of a premier yearling sales cohort started racing at 2, so it isn't widespread. My study supports that in that only a small proportion, 13% of the fall crop, raced as 2 years old. But it also, the research supports the fact that in multiple ways, multiple papers, that horses that start the racing at an early age are less likely to have a fatality or a fatal injury. They have a positive career correlation with career outcome. They're more likely to have longer careers and have more career starts. And the risk of retirement reduces with the earlier age of race start.
Now, you were quoted post your delivery to the conference of this report that for the horse racing industry to retain its social license, researchers and regulators need to engage with the community by providing clear, unambiguous and accurate information and correct the wrong and misleading information that some groups use in their campaigns.
Yes, part of the problem we've had is that until recent times, the industry hasn't been willing to engage with the public, and the public is this new community stakeholder that gives us this social license to operate. And in order to continue to have that social license, we need to be able to provide them with factual, accurate information with which to base decisions on. You know, the recent troubles that they've had in the New South Wales greyhound racing industry has really brought this to light, in that these animal activist organizations have the ability to influence what the government is doing. And we need to really ensure that horse racing maintains that social license. We need to engage in that, engage the public and educate them on what the typical life of is the thoroughbred racehorse.
Mm. And in this age of social media, these groups do tend to propel their own agendas, and that is used to disrupt racing, whatever code it may be, or in some cases, close an industry down.
Yes, and part of the social media is a very challenging aspect of that, in that the meme has become the communication word, which has a cute emotive photo and simple sentencing, you know, to create a response or to get people to click on a link to read more. Unfortunately, things are often not that simple, and we need to be able to better explain what exactly is going, you know, happening in our industry to educate the public.
Mm. So you've exposed a lot of these myths to the Australian Veterinary Association conference. So beyond that point, where do you intend to take this research and data to from here?
As with most research, it opens up other avenues of investigation and gets us to look further and deeper into it. So we'll be continuing to do that. So my PhD will be looking at the 2010 and 2015 fall crops. Because we did identify some areas of where improved traceability was needed, and the industry has already responded in those areas. In that in 2014 they brought in a retirement rule, and in 2016 they've brought in the registration of foals within 30 days of birth. So both of those rules are aimed at improving that traceability, and we'll be using some of that information to then look at better define what happens to foals from birth until when they enter training. And again, look at where they're going after retirement from racing, and to further look at reasons why they have left and how that influences the different outcomes, and if there's a way to better describe and better advise on where to trainers to send horses.
So, summing up, our racehorses or thoroughbreds that are bred for the industry are in better shape than what we are often led to believe by the activists.
Absolutely. One thing we need to really think about with this study for the 2005 fall crop is the majority of those horses retired from racing prior to the off-the-track program being established. And so this is what the industry's been doing historically. I would expect things, you know, with this, the off-the-track program gaining momentum in many of these post-racing careers, that you would see improvements in those rehoming rates. And I look forward to investigating those.
And away from being very busy, I'm sure, doing this extraordinary research, you are a practicing veterinarian.
I am a practicing veterinarian. I do locuming for many practices in the Victorian in Queensland. I also am the current president of the Equine Veterinarians Australia.
Mm. Do you do a lot of racing work?
I have been a racetrack vet in the past, but I do a bit more of everything nowadays. I work for both racetrack practices and performance and pleasure horse practices as well.
And you grew up in Texas. When did you come to Australia?
I came to Australia in 2003 to attend Melbourne University. So I gained my veterinary degree here in Melbourne. And I loved it so much, I couldn't leave.
And you're doing a great job. Congratulations on all this hard work you've done to disprove a few myths out there and make us all feel good about the industry that we love so much.
Thank you very much, Joe.
That's Dr. Meredith Flash, a great report she's put together, which was delivered to the Australian Veterinary Association conference in recent weeks. You can go online to read that at thoroughbredbreedersvictoria.com.au.